Hi, this is Frank, and you're listening to The Frank Peters Show. And today's podcast is hosted at SantaBarbaraCyclist.com, because that's where I am these days, in Santa Barbara, California. And I have met someone here in Santa Barbara, a guest on today's show, a fantastic adventure cyclist, I guess you'd have to say, Heather Rose. Let's listen.
I'm Heather Rose.
Heather, and how would you encapsulate in just a sentence your bicycle persona, I guess?
Wow. I don't think I have just one. I come from a racing background, road racing, cyclocross racing, a little bit of cross-country mountain bike racing, and I'm a very dedicated bicycle commuter, so my original, you know, Schwinn mountain bike is still my commuter, and I've been riding it around for 12 years as a commuter bike.
Oh, I didn't know that. I was keen to find out about that. So, of course, you're so noteworthy right now. What's your most recent accomplishment?
So I recently just completed the Oregon Timber Trail, which is a new route that traverses the whole entire length of Oregon, south to north. And I think it was about 670 miles, if I'm remembering correctly. And I did that at the very beginning of August, just this year.
Were you inspired by others who did the ride?
So originally I got into bikepacking about 4 years ago or so after reading Jill Homer's book, Be Brave, Be Strong. She was one of the earlier, not really not earliest, but earlier females in the bikepacking world, and rode the Great Divide race, the Tour Divide, from Banff in Canada to the Mexican border. And she's a journalist and a writer and an editor. And so I devoured her book and said, this sounds really fun and exciting. And so I started putting together gear to bikepack, and with the goal of racing the Tour Divide the following year, which didn't end up happening due to some injuries I had to overcome eventually. But the bikepacking itself definitely stuck.
And the Timber Trail, it's a brand new trail, right?
It is. In fact, for those of us that rode it this year, they called us pioneers, which is sort of fun. And only a few people took on the whole thing this year because it's still pretty rough, especially the southern portion of it. They're trying to bring back a national recreation trail called the Fremont Trail that is very remote, and hasn't been maintained for I don't know how long, many years. And Oregon, it turns out, has a lot of trees, and when trees die, they fall down. And so if a trail isn't maintained every season there, that means there's a lot of downed trees to deal with. And so that makes the trail hard to find. It makes it non-existent at points. And the board of the Timber Trail have done a ton of work doing stewardship weekends, and they went down to the Fremont and did a section of it. But it's, I don't know, the first 80 or 100 miles of the trail, maybe. And that's a lot of weekends, right? And so there's plenty of it that hasn't been recently cleared yet. And so some of it I rode that had been recently cleared. Some of it I tried to ride that hadn't been cleared and then had to give up and find nearby logging roads to take and circumvent areas. So it was truly adventure exploration.
Yeah, really, the ultimate adventure bicycle experience. Now, here in Santa Barbara, we've just recently developed a website called Cycle Cal Coast, and it's trying to attract bicycle tourists to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. And much of our motivation is to mimic Ride Oregon, Travel Oregon, and their initiatives. And so it was just sometime in midsummer when they released the Oregon Timber Trail website. And of course, I couldn't resist, clicking all over that. And then it seemed like just days later, you're posting on Facebook.
I actually got the track from Gabriel, one of the main organizers, less than a week before it was officially released. I sort of cornered him and said, I'm running out of time. I have to get back to work in Santa Barbara in mid-August. And I really want to do this. Is the track ready? Is this going to happen? And he says, yes, it's happening. And I can give you the files. So I had the files up and loaded, ready to go before the days that it actually came out, and was organizing Away to the Start, which is actually tough to find a way because it's mm-hmm. so remote. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really got a jump on it.
And when you say you had all the files, you're downloading the maps?
Yeah, the GPS files or GPX files. And I use two devices when I travel. I use a Garmin eTrex for navigation, for actually following the little line. It's usually red. You can change the color. So I always say I'm following the little red line. So if I meet someone in the wilderness, they're like, where are you going? I'm like, I don't know. I'm following the little red line, right? And then I also put the files on my phone as my backup, because you definitely, when you're that remote, need a backup if you're not carrying paper maps. And I used Ride with GPS for that. And it was actually the first time I've used that program in any detail. Like, on my computer, people put up files that way, and I download them to my Garmin normally. But this was my first time using their app on my phone, and I really enjoyed it for the more holistic approach to the trail, because the Garmin screen is horrible for getting the big picture of what you're doing. But with on my phone, I could really see, where am I going each day? It had this great feature of showing me which sections of the trail were dirt road, single track trail, paved road, and so it gave, and the elevation profile. So it gave you a much better sense of what you were actually facing that day.
Mm-hmm. And of course, CycleCal Coast, we're using the same tool set that Travel Oregon is using. And anyway, I often say Ride with GPS is like the foundation for the work we're doing. So anyway, that's been fun to see just how committed they are to growing bicycle tourism. How about other adventures like this on a similar scale, Heather?
So the biggest one is definitely last summer. I did the Colorado Trail Race. So bikepacking has a couple branches to it. You can go out and tour, or really crazy people actually will try and like race each other. They're unofficial, unsanctioned. It's sort of, you just agree, here's the file for the track. Here's, we're going to meet on this day. The clock never stops, and the first one to the finish, quote unquote, wins. And for almost everybody that does these bikepacking races, it's a personal journey. We're not racing each other. It's a wonderfully supportive and friendly community, an international community, where you could really pop into a town, and if you're a bikepacker, they're like, please stay at my house. You know, it's just a really wonderful group of people. And so, yeah, so last summer I completed the Colorado Trail Race, which has about a 50% success rate of finishers, of people that start each year. And I was one of three women to finish last year. And so, and it's hard. It's really hard. It was, it took me 10 days basically. And I was riding about 15 miles a day of high altitude, single track. And I wanted to quit all the time because it was definitely the biggest athletic and mental accomplishment of my life, because really that's what's fun for me about bikepacking is it's, I don't know, you know, maybe 20-30% physical and the rest is mental. Do you quit or do you keep going when you're uncomfortable? And I like that challenge.
I wondered about that. I've done nothing near the scale that you have done, but I've been out there solo in the middle of the woods at times in Canada. And you get to spend a lot of time in your own head, kind of, huh? Got to have good mental health. That's what I found. I've been on some solo bike trips out in the middle of nowhere with good mental health, and other times less so. True for everybody, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, it can go both ways. Because you don't, on one hand, I suppose, you don't want to be, we'll say, in poor mental health and then sort of spiral and have too many negative thoughts, right, while you're out there. But I also definitely know that in this community, and I come from a rock climbing background, and also in the rock climbing and mountaineering community, there are a lot of folks that do these kind of things that are definitely struggle mentally. And it's a way to clear the mind and to gain mental health. So it can really take you out of, you know, the modern place and world that's busy and where you might be spinning in your head and a little stuck, and release all that for a lot of people. And I find for me that's probably also true, that it actually, mentally, I feel so much better when I'm out there, right? That's the beauty of doing it. And I think what brings that is the simplicity of it. That's what I love about traveling by bicycle, is the pure, just present living. Nothing else exists. Each day, all you have to think about is, where am I going to get food? Where am I going to get water? Where am I going to sleep? Repeat. And it's beautiful.
Oh, that's so nice, Heather. It made me think of years ago, I used to play a lot of golf, and I'd say I couldn't bring my problems onto the golf course because I was so terrified of my next shot that I couldn't think of anything else at home. But, so.
You're the first person to ever compare golfing and bikepacking. I like it.
Well, you can spend a lot of time at both.
Definitely. Yeah, both very time-consuming activities for sure.
No, Heather, the first time I met you was at SB Bike, the Bike Coalition here in Santa Barbara. You were doing a slideshow. You were entertaining the group. What was that about?
So every year during Cyclemania here in Santa Barbara, I think that was my third year running, I do a bikepacking presentation, combination of how-to and slideshow of here's the cool things I've done in the last year. It seems to get people inspired to go out and want to explore the world and hopefully make it seem reachable and doable. Like, what gear do I need? How do I get started? Because there's a lot of ways to get started with bikepacking without having to go buy all the fancy gear immediately and all the proper bags. You can strap just dry sacks from REI that you might already have to your bike with, you know, different Velcros and ski straps and things like that. And just get after it on whatever bike you have. And if you have a bike that's not appropriate for trail, start on dirt roads and, you know, ride what you got. And so I've been doing that. And then I'm also doing a presentation this Wednesday night, specifically geared towards women as part of REI's, her story that they have going this year to highlight women in sports and try and create more equity, which I think we all know doesn't exist. So trying to just put our faces out there more and get more women out there feeling comfortable doing these things and highlighting them on, you know, their magazine covers and their ad covers as they should be because, you know, equal people doing wonderful things outdoors.
Men or women, when they learn of your accomplishments, your ambitions, they are inspired, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a strange thing for those of us who don't do something with a goal of inspiring others. But if you're being honest and paying attention to the feedback you're getting, it's clear that I am inspiring other people to do these things. But I do really see the gender difference, and that does help motivate me. Because, for example, being not only the first person to do the Oregon Timber Trail, but to be a female that was the first person to do the Oregon Timber Trail, and on their Facebook page, the number of women that were asking questions and interested in wanting information from me and motivated to go do it, I can guarantee you that ratio was completely skewed from what it would have been because I was female and had done it. You just don't see nearly that many women's voices stepping up and asking these questions and getting involved normally.
Your mother's very proud of you.
My mother is very proud of me. Both for my PhD in neuroscience and for the fact that I go off and do these things that scare her a little, but she does a pretty good job of keeping it under wraps and knowing that, you know, I'm strong, that I try to be wise in the choices I make when I'm out there, and that I'll probably come home safely.
So back to your presentation during Cyclemania at SB Bike. That was the first time I had attended, but I could tell you were really experienced at working the audience because at several points in time during your presentation, you'd stop to have little questions and the right answer got a candy bar or something like that.
Well, I am a trained professional. I teach for a living. So I'm a professor at Santa Barbara City College and I teach anatomy and physiology. So I have lots of experience working a group and being upfront like that. And so I've taken some of those skills into giving these presentations. Now, I don't give out candy rewards and throw, you know, candy corn around and stuff in the classroom, but it works pretty well for bikepacking because I'm a big believer that you don't have to eat all the fancy bars and food, that sugar is sugar. And if you're out there burning it, then it doesn't actually matter what source it comes from. Obviously, you always need a mix of foods but bikepacking is very different, where we try and get meals, you know, at diners, at restaurants, every time we go through a town, maybe even one to go often, and then eat more, just a sampling of... Because a lot of our meals when we're traveling just come from gas stations. And as a vegetarian with vegan tendencies, it can be challenging. Yeah. And I'm not strict, so I don't accept a label as vegan or vegetarian. When I'm on the trail, I eat some packaged tuna. You know, I adapt the diet to my life, but my general base intentions when I'm eating are to avoid animal products, which does make those gas station refills challenging.
The glamorous part of bike tourism.
Oh, there are so many glamorous parts of it, including sleeping in outhouses from time to time.
that just flashed through my mind, too. I saw that post.
Yeah, it's sort of a rite of passage in bike pack racing, at least, is at some point you're going to sleep in, we call them Montana Hiltons. no offense to anyone, Montana. I love Montana. But yeah, when it's cold and raging storm and depending on what you're carrying with you. For example, on this trip, touring, I use a tarp system normally. So I had a tarp and a mosquito net that I hung over me as needed. And I was on this super exposed ridge with a massive lightning storm coming in hot at the end of the day. And there was this wonderful, large, very clean, not at all smelly outhouse. And I'm like, perfect. I know where I'm sleeping tonight. And it, I mean, that storm was raging out there. I was so happy to be in there.
You paint quite a picture.
I know. Sometimes I feel like I lead a dual life, like professional in the classroom at Santa Barbara. Now I'm eating M&Ms in an outhouse and sleeping on the floor. And I love the change and the variety. It keeps life interesting for me.
Yeah. I can imagine. Now, how about the thrills and chills of being out there on the trail? And then when that's over, I've experienced that sometimes there's like, a letdown re-entering society. What's that like for you?
Yeah, that is a tough problem for most people that do big adventures. And usually I feel pretty ready to come home at the end of summer. I miss my friends. I'm really good at making friends on the road because when you travel as much as I do, you have to or you're going to spend a lot of time alone. But, you know, it's not your friends that you've known for years. And so I'm always ready to come home and reconnect with folks here and my community and my volunteer activities here. But there is a sort of a tough boredom aspect. I'm like, oh, the same trails, the same roads. Okay. You know, it takes me a little while to get used to it. And there's a mental shift that has to happen where at first I feel pretty sort of bored and frustrated by being on the same old stuff that I've ridden a million times here. And I just noticed it just this week, actually, a mental shift. I was out for a ride, and I was like, oh, that feeling of boredom went away, and I'm somehow mentally shifted back into just enjoying the process. I'm on my bike. I'm happy, even if it is a ride that I've done, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of times. But there is always a shift, and I'm always planning the next thing. And that's probably a big part of it. Like, I'm like already, my friends just teased me the other day because my spring break is already being planned, and that's not even till March. And then I've got winter break where I'm going to New Zealand for 3.5 months.
Wow. So I can picture that. Planning the next trip is part of the therapy of coming off of the last trip. Yeah. Let's see. You said earlier you were inspired by a woman who wrote a book. I've wondered your notoriety being the first and a woman on the timber trail. Any, is there a book coming?
No. you know, I've toyed with the idea of at least...
I already picture you giving me your autograph.
Do you want to ghostwrite it for me?
Okay, I deserve that.
You know, I've toyed with at least starting a blog to get my stories, you know, written down a little, and to refine my writing skills because they're very rusty right now. I haven't done a lot of writing in a long time, and most of the writing I've done is scientific writing, which is not writing that most people enjoy reading.
No footnotes.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, you could, but yeah. But mostly it's a time thing. My plate's pretty full, and obviously that would take a huge time dedication. And it's just not drawing me, to be honest. It's not just time. It's just right now where I am in my life, which is a very busy place with a full-time plus job and my activities. Yeah, maybe someday.
I wonder, too. You came last May during Cyclemania to talk about last year's rides. I keep thinking the scope of this latest accomplishment, you could speak for days on end. You could turn it into a series.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think I'd want to talk about myself that much.
Okay. All right. Where else should we go, Heather?
Well, I am going to do a bikepacking race this coming weekend, so that's on my mind. Not this weekend, a day from now, but soon. In a week, I've got a race coming up. And I haven't done many races. One attempted one where I quit to injury, a local one, Tour de Las Padres. And then I finished the Colorado Trail last year. And then there's a newer race, a few years old, called the Caldera out of Mammoth. There's a 500-mile version and a 250-mile version each year. And I have a four-day weekend this coming weekend because I don't have Friday or Monday classes right now, which is wonderful. And so I'm going to go see if I can complete the 250 in 4 days, which is going to be pushing it. It's it goes at the high points over 11,000 feet, and it's supposed to be a really rugged, rough track. And I'm not sure if I'll get it done or not, but neither way, I'll be spending the weekend in the mountains riding my bike, so it's going to be wonderful.
Sounds great, Heather. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for your interest and time. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're back in the studio, and before I say goodbye, I'd like to thank you for your interest and listening, and of course remind you that you can go to santabarbaracyclist.com, where you'll find many more podcast interviews with local experts, faraway experts, on all things bicycle. That's santabarbaracyclist.com. Well, thanks so much for listening, and good night.